Okay, so thank you. So good morning. It took a while to reach this place, but I hope it's nice to spend at least a day. So what I'm going to discuss is it's about a riddle that is about 80 years old. And unfortunately, I must advise you that I'm not going to solve it today. So what I intend is just to at least show and discuss at least some of the contributions I've been making in different aspects to respect to this riddle, that is whether neutrinos are Majorana or Dirac particles. And the idea of with a look at the sky is that because always I've been doing astroparticles, so looking at astrophysical objects, so in general structures, that may help a little bit what still we cannot do in the lab. So I divided in three pieces. So that means if you get bored with one, I hope it's improving when the next one. So I call it the first one mass and mix. I will discuss a little bit processes that have nothing to do with total electron number violation. Then discuss a little bit about Majorana, things that you may well know, but at least pose the problem. And then what in the last few years, I try to make some contribution and mostly convince cosmologists that this is a very important problem to work on. So let me start by what is the initial riddle to me. So there is a bunch of numbers there, that this is the masses of the leptons and quarks. And the question of the mass is has a long history to understand what is this mass of the particles. And of course, the discovery of the Higgs has been helping to disentangle one more layer, but still there are lots of numbers there that we don't understand. Well, it is true that thanks to understanding data from LHC, we can test or verify that the Yukawa couplings, both through production and decays, then for the third generation, agree with what is the mass determined for these heavy quarks. But the very first thing is that there are numbers here that I'm not going to discuss. There may be a zoo there that is hard, and we don't have still tools and the right ideas and the right answers how to address this problem. So the issue is, and the issue that has been discussed for a long time is maybe the distance between neutrinos that are the only neutral leptons there with respect to their charged leptons has something different, and maybe is not influenced by this variability. So the issue is whether we can just learn something about verifying ideas that have to do with this distance. So for the moment, yes, I'm quoting masses of neutrinos from the lowest to the highest, and just for a convention, taking just one electron ball for the mass of each one of them. And as you see, one of them can go as low as it wants with respect to data. So in the same case, or equivalently to the quark sector, then flavor states and mass eigenstates are not the same, so then they don't have to. So that means you can express one flavor states in mass eigenstates with this CKEN matrix for the quark sector, analogously for the lepton sector, and this mass matrix in the quark sector corresponds to seven parameters, three masses, three angles, and one phase. The first thing I'm going to discuss is physics that is insensitive to this proposal of why neutrinos are so separated from the others. And the reason is because I'm going to discuss processes that don't violate total lepton number, and correspond to relativistic neutrinos. So any influence from this scale of physics that may change properties don't affect this change of flavor. So with the information that we have on neutrinos, and I will discuss in a second, the three mass states of neutrinos corresponds to, in an arbitrary scale, to 1, 2, and 3, and they have flavor content given by some amount of nu e, some amount of nu mu, and some amount of nu tau. So this is a kind of a graphical way to express that the distribution is somewhat close to arbitrary, it's large for any one of them, sorry. So, and the other thing that is shown here is that there are splittings that are the ones that we are going to discuss, that they can be measured, and that there are two ways of ordering these, because what is measured up to now is two splittings, whether they can be the two closest or the smallest splitting corresponds to two states that are up or below the other one. So before entering into some numbers that tell us where we are, I would like to just remind you some idea, what is the simple physics that is involved in this flavor conversion. So the first thing is, once you have massive neutrinos that are all relativistic, so the dispersion relation is different for the different mass eigenstates. And therefore, when they travel, they get a different phase, and this phase in vacuum, basically influenced by the Higgs, BEV, and whatever, or the Higgs field, and whatever other things may be there, then affects different masses in different way, different neutrinos in different way, and therefore they have index of refraction that are different. So vacuum is by refringing for neutrinos. But that also happens in matter, and this is way was comes back to Fermi, where you have an index of refraction for electron neutrinos that does not have contribution for nu mu and nu tau neutrinos, that is basically proportional to the number of scatterers in the medium times the forward scattering over k squared. And this expression that says that whenever electron neutrinos cross a medium, because this medium is full of electrons but has no muons and taus, gets an extra contribution in this index of refraction. So at the end, for all the phenomena that we have here and we are going to discuss, and it corresponds at lots of experiments, basically is neutrino optics. You have the analogous in optics to by refringence, and therefore the states that travel, they have different index of refraction, and they may have conversion from one state to the other. Like in mediums like that, you have from parallel to perpendicular polarizations in this kind of materials. Okay, so those are the two simple pieces. One is mass eigenstates and flavor eigenstates are different, so they have these matrices that relate them. And then the other thing is the medium, even in vacuum, is by refringing for these states. There are more things, of course, because once you have these properties, you have to make sure that these processes of going one to the other happen. So that means you have to make sure that the process is coherent. And that doesn't happen very often. In the case of quarks, for example, you will never have that because there is no coherence. And in the case of neutrinos, it depends. So for example, in the case of solar neutrinos, when you go to the lowest ones, the most dominant ones, PP neutrinos, then interactions in the sun of the main reaction PP makes loss of coherence, and basically what you have is only flavor average, and therefore what you have is the analogous to the quark sector. You have just mixings that combine flavor to mass states.
In the quark sector, at least you can have can
and. Yeah, but those are not the quarks.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's true that you can have other states, and in fact, neutrino flavor conversion, neutrino oscillations were motivated, of course, by the. But there you have Kishorak and Lilon, that are the states that really have. Okay, and then relate to K0 and K0. Okay, so let me start just by summarizing. And in here, I at least made some contributions trying to understand when the puzzle was really complicated, that still was not known what was this right solution. And here you see what happens with the data. There is a collection of different types of experiments that are summarized in this and then tell us information about these two parameters. These processes are, at least for this contour plots, are in vacuum. So basically the main parameters that compare are the different index of refraction for the two states, in this case is muon and tau neutrinos. And when you have muon and tau neutrinos, then basically you have only vacuum effects, but vacuum is birefringent, so it can change this flavor. And then the other parameter is the mixing. This is how the state starts produce in flavor, but travels in mass eigenstates. So in the past, and it was very important in 1998 when Super K confirmed that there were neutrino oscillations, then as you see now, this has been superseded by man-made neutrinos. So and this is two accelerator neutrino experiments with detectors Minos and Super Kamio Kande from Tokai and from Fermilab. And you can see that now we can forget about the atmospheric neutrino problem, how it was solved, because the main parameters both are determined by, as I say, more controlled experiments. And what is still is unknown is, well, there is some lack of knowledge whether this mixing is pi over 4 or not, and then on which side it is, and also which is the sign. So that means whether these two states are above or below the other one. If you look to the right side, it has been quite new. It was happening in the last very few years. So some few reactor antineutrino experiments at the right distance, about a kilometer or so, then they found that there are conversions of new disappearance of anti-new neutrinos. And then of them, the latest one, the fastest one, and the biggest one in Daya Bay in China is the one that has limited most, which is the value. And it corresponds to similar delta M squared but different mixing. Of course, in this picture, everything looks like represented by only one splitting in masses and a given angle, but all is done consistently with the mixing matrix that I discussed before. Let me just mention that all this data is now atmospheric accelerator reactor compatible, and that there is one large mixing and one large splitting. It's about 2.5 10 to minus 3 electron volt square. Root square means 0.05 electron volts, so that guarantees one neutrino with mass at least 0.05 electron volts. And then there are two kinds of mixings for the new mu tau conversion. It can be demonstrated that there is non-new conversion. It's about maximal, pi over 4. And here is small, but not very small. OK, one of the things that I will discuss in next soon is that what are the indications for CP violation in this sector? This is one of the sectors that I spend really lots of time in understanding while the other is splitting. The one that where you have more largest content of electron neutrinos. This was known as the solar neutrino problem, the deficit of neutrinos coming from the sun, respect to calculations from the standard solar model. And in fact, I participated in trying to understand better these calculations and compare with that data, and also trying to understand the different conversions of the different types of neutrinos produced in the different reactions in the sun. What you see is that still there is no experiment that can find a better determination of this mixing that is not maximal, but is large, very large, compared to quark mixing angles. And still this is the experiment that determines that. While a reactor experiment, Kamlang, that is the reactors in Japan, but with a detector that is also in Kamioka mine, but where reactors on average are 100 kilometers, corresponds to a wavelength that is very different to the other one. Instead of 1 kilometer, 100 kilometers. So that means the delta M squared for producing this flavor conversion is about 100 times smaller. This is why you get here some, it's not so much, but 30 to 40 smaller splitting. Okay, so you can see that in delta M squared, there seems a strong indication of that the delta M squared should be there, while solar neutrinos then tend to agree. So everyone will be happy with this. And this is true because the uncertainty in the delta M squared is bad for solar neutrinos. But in solar neutrinos, that this is one of my main fields, so we have several problems there. Is that unfortunately now we understand worse the sun than 10 years ago. And the main reason is because better determinations of the metal abundance in the sun make a sun that beats wrongly. Let me just be very short on what I mean by that. So metals are determined just by collecting meteorites and checking the relations between different metals in these meteorites, and also looking at the sun, different spots, and in there, determine lines, look at the width of the line, and with modeling the best that you can, which is the temperature there and what is the different collision terms there, then you can see from the width, extract the amount of metal. Then you do all from different spots, and then you infer the amount of metals. Okay, so this was done, and that came to a determination. But of course, in this kind of business, what you do, you always try to do a step forward and step forward. And the last 10 years, there have been better determinations that fit much better these lines, that get a significantly decrease in the amount of metals. And then now, very simple, if you want a sun that works equally, then if you have less metals, because the sun, by the way, is in the outer part is convective. So convective means everything is mixed up, so same concentration. So if you have less metals, what you do is just put them more concentrated. So that means you make smaller the convective zone. Okay, so you keep some similar than before. But if you move the convective zone, then the transition from convective to radiative zone is changed. And this is very well measured by waves, because we look at the 5-minute oscillation waves and all. And then we see lots of waves. We can determine very well that. And that fails.
Why do you have to measure metallicity? Could you just fix for it from the data?
Why do you need these metal abundances?
Why do you measure it? No,
Helios seismology doesn't have enough information to determine the metals. So this has been, some people have been trying to use Helios seismology with metal abundances, but you need metal abundances because metal abundances are that means Helios seismology is not precise enough to determine, because metals come in a combination. They don't have one by one. So in waves, what you have is densities in different parts, but this density is a combination of many metals. So you can have only some kind of scaling, but not the ratio. But iron, carbon, and oxygen, they change differently different reactions, and then the temperature profile in the sun. So it's very important to know correctly the different metal abundances. Yes, please.
Is there only one astrophysical group that has redone the fits to the...
No, there have been others.
Spectra, or it's confirmed by other groups?
It's confirmed by other groups. Of course, there are little ups and downs, but it's confirmed that the other one, so that means the first one was kind of naive or simplest. So I mean, it was enough at that time, because basically convection was treated in a very, very simple way, just with some scale height, and that's all. While the new methods in convection, you need some not 1D process. So that means you need at least 2D. So including 2D was the thing that changed, make the lines much better fitted. So that means everything, look like goes in the right direction. That's correct. But also you have lots of lines, because the thing is, the important thing also in the new determinations is that you can determine iron by different many lines. And the agreement, so the determination that you take from the different lines, agree, that's really. Okay, I'm taking too much time in this step, but okay, yeah, let me just stress that different delta M square. And the thing is that although there are some dependencies on the solar modeling, one of the things that pushes delta M square down is the day-night effect in the Earth. As I said, neutrinos crossing the Earth, there are different indices of refraction from electrons and the other flavors. So therefore, neutrinos, in fact, are brighter when they come from the sun crossing the Earth, so at night, than during the day. This has been measured by Super K. It's a very small effect. So for the moment, Super K only has been able to collect a difference that is 2 sigma. So they will try to be increasing and increasing. But this is a good signature because it's very precise on delta M square. So that is, I would say, then this is fantastic. But we have some little worries here and there. So let me just summarize, just to tell you the last short thing about this, is that how well do we know the other parameters? So I mentioned 3 angles, 2 delta M squares, and now is the CP phase. So we don't know, we don't still know the CP phase. And in fact, it's one of the major programs, both in US, in Japan and in the US, just to go for determining that there is CP violation. And I say US and Japan, and it's not because the Europeans are not interested in this. But of course, the LHC is taking so large resources that the neutrino physicists, experimental, they are going to join one or the other team. or they, in fact, they are doing, depending on the technology. Well, here is a list of numbers, et cetera, that tells us how things are improving, and there is a slight indication of that this CP phase is, in this parameterization, is about three pi halves, but okay. Okay, so let me come back to summarize these results that has been a lot and a big effort for many. That is, well, with respect to this reader, is that the neutrinos, on one hand, then there are some splitting, so that means there is some minimal amount of mass, depending on the hierarchy or the ordering. If the two states that have a small splitting is higher or lower than the other, then you have a minimal value that is about a little larger than 0.10 electron volts, or about 0.06 electron volts. And that depends on the scale, the overall scale, that can grow to a regime where you don't see splittings from the point of view of the total mass and the degenerator. This is the minimum value of masses that you can have. These horizontal lines, the full lines. Those other ones I will discuss later, and that has to do how well observations can do to test this. Ah, okay, so that was your question. Sorry, I missed that. Ah, yeah, okay. Great, thank you. Okay, well, in any case, they try to point out where we are, well, just by CMB, although this has been improved a little bit, where they claim, although there are some, of course, systematics depending on what is the type of, but this kind of consensus that the cosmologists go in very tightly to limit total mass into there, and that they claim that they could reach there. Okay. And now, compared to the riddle of masses, then there is, of course, the other thing that at least points out that we might go in the right direction. So that means that the neutral leptons, then they look very differently in the mass, but also they look very different in this mixing matrix. So that means the relation flavor mass against this is completely different, has nothing to do. Here you are close to some kind of symmetric situation with some kind of a little flavor violation, so kind of a small flavor violation. Here you have numbers that could be anarchic if you want. So it looks like just having the same mechanism to explain these two things looks complicated. So I spend just one third on this part, and now I come to the main point I made at the beginning, that is the strategy is not looking at why these numbers are, how they are, etc., but trying to figure out, and this has been not my plan, it has been in the community, the plan is trying to figure out, and also it came by beyond the standard models, that there are differences between the both sectors, and then we try to exploit that. Okay, so when one looks historically why right-handed neutrinos were not included in the standard model by Weinberg, Salan, so it's easy to look at that. So there were no claims of neutrino masses, so you could live without that, so you don't need to explain them. But also, adding right-handed neutrinos is like a Pandora box. Where do you stop? Your gauge symmetries and your chirality, that were the basic ingredients in the standard model, don't tell you where you to stop. It's one, it's two, it's three, how many? How many do you add? Just by aesthetics, we add 3 right-handed neutrinos. Up to now, data imply that at least you need 2. So we don't understand, of course, very well. So it's clear that we are improving and bringing new slices in understanding the mass sector, but still we are probably far from that. Okay, but once you are right-handed neutrinos, you have this this question whether this term can be included. That is the Majorana mass term and has to do with the idea of Majorana. So, and both are connected and also connected with the lepton number violation. So let me go to the second part. And as I said, it's an old problem, and many of you certainly have been using Majorana fermions in any of your beyond standard models. But you may know that historically, this was a paper that in fact was submitted by Fermi, because Majorana thought that this was a very simple idea, where he basically tried to avoid for the Dirac fermions the issue of negative energies, right? That was kind of a difficult thing to accept at the beginning. And this was some kind of an exercise. Well, there is this possibility of this spin-offs. Well, okay. So at the end, he added a condition that was only valid for neutral fermions. And with this condition, then what you have is now these Majorana fermions. So, so for those not, many of you, of course, know very well that, but for those that are not used, when you see a C, this is this operator charge conjugate, means that right-handed change to left. So that means when you see this is a right-handed neutrino, but this is a left-handed neutrino. Now they are not mass eigenstates. Once we introduce this mass term that is permitted by gauge symmetries, and the thing is that this mass term combined with the standard Higgs Yukawa couplings, then what you split is your four states, your Dirac neutrino, into two neutrinos. And depending on how large is the splitting due to this new mass term, then these neutrinos will be close to Dirac. They are called pseudo-Dirac when this splitting is very small, or directly to Majorana fermions, one, the, our familiar light neutrinos, and then some other heavy ones. How large is this splitting? Well, that just came from the modeling at the time. So that means whenever you have this beyond the standard model, then this came at a given scale. So that means then you put this at that scale. And just for illustration, then you want to have this term. If you want to have this term, this Majorana mass term, the easiest thing, if you think that is something produced by high energy physics, well, you integrate those states, then you get some effective theory. And the first term is the famous Weinberg operator that tells you that two leptons with two Higgses then produces this five-dimensional operator term that can be realized in very few things, in very few ways, that belong to many different beyond standard model possibilities. And they are because we have their doublet, a doublet with doublet, you can have a singlet or a triplet. And that's why you have different types of what is called seesaw, because it was initially invented or proposed just because that produces this low energy, low neutrino mass. And then it can be whether it's scalar or fermion, this triplet. Okay, I won't get into that. The only thing is that for my discussion, for simplicity, I'm going to consider this case where this term just basically corresponds to twice vacuum expectation value, the Yukawas, over this mass scale of this single fermion, but it can be applicable to the other cases equally. So when you look at that, into that, and then you add these right-handed neutrinos with more thinking, then first thing, so there are many things that happen, and then they look too naive, and basically coming to several problems. One, well, first is that where do I put the mass? I don't have a particular one. There was the one strongly motivated when this appeared as a solution, that is the GATT scale. Because we have this spread in the mass of the fermion sector, then which Yukawa you take as reference? Well, for the GATT scale, of course, you take the heaviest one, the largest one, the top. But for the others, you don't know. So it means it depends on which you take. And then so you have, in principle, all these possibilities available. So you can go even so low, as low as that. And you could have right-handed neutrinos that are really very light. And again, the number is not determined. So that means that here we have this window. The thing is, just adding right-handed neutrinos by itself is also creates several problems. For example, you cannot add a right-handed neutrino at any given mass. You will get two corrections to the mass of the Higgs, and then in principle there you have to figure out some other way just to cure for that. So even that they may be introducing in this very naive way, then clearly had to be accompanied by some way to figure out these other problems. So if the right handed that you add is very large.
If the right handed mass is very large, yes, there will be a correction to the Higgs mass, but it's
But that correction, you can just go and look because this mass is mixed with the others just because of this mixing in the Majorana term. So that means when you go and you compute, then you are going to have this correction that goes like this Yukawas that you have with the mass. And then you see that in principle you get corrections that are very large if the mass of the Majorana is above 10 to the...
Eh? No,
it's not particularly new, no. But I'm saying that you run into this problem if you just add the guy freely. So that means the thing is many times, so in this discussion, you can say, oh, I could put this particle and that's all. So that means I can solve all my problems and my mysteries. That's clearly not the case. So the thing is probably for low energy physics, that may be enough. And maybe there are other corrections, higher dimensions, that should show up and tell me what is the real theory that I have there. But it's not just barely adding right-handed neutrinos. Okay, so just one more thing about that, and then I go into more detail. So once I add this mass, then as I said, we have to figure out how many right-handed neutrinos we add. And as I said, this in principle is free and depends on data. So that means I don't have any guiding rule here at this level in this construction. So it's clearly that one is not enough, because with one I cannot produce two mass splittings. And then that depends on which are the charges, leptonic charges that I give to these right-handed neutrinos. And here I say which are the, depending on the number and what are the numbers that you can assign, that can be plus or minus one. And then depending on which you are, then you end in a, if you have a leptonic charge, of course, you end in Dirac neutrinos, or if not, you end in Majorana neutrinos. So the thing is, this is very important because sometimes when you add right-handed neutrinos in this freely way, people, when they try to understand data, they use many more parameters than the ones that are really required in the model. For example, people have been playing with data, with systems that really are not physical. Okay, how to see Majorana neutrinos? This has been longly discussed, and I will make it short to not get late. But basically, there is this simple example by Kaiser and Stodolsky, where you say, well, the mass term makes this flip between right-handed and left-handed. So it means it makes this flip, so this helicity flip. So how do you see that physically? Well, a helicity flip, you will see, for example, in this very basic system, the pion decay. So that means you go and boost the system just to see the other helicity flip. So you have to spend, so just put some energy in the system, and then you see the helicity flip, one. But then the helicity flip needs this Majorana mass term. But this Majorana mass term, we think, that goes like, has some suppression. And the suppression is something that you have to pay for. So that's why it's so hard. The easiest method, and why it's hard but not so hard, is just using neutrinos double beta decay. Because at least you don't need to spend this high energy to see the flip. The flip is produced to make the two beta process that one of the neutrino with one helicity is produced is absorbed with the other through this Majorana mass term. So whenever you have nuclei where the even that they have energetically prohibited to go to the lowest level by single beta decay, then you could try this double beta decay. And in fact, it happens, it has been measured, but this is the double beta decay with neutrinos. So the thing that is trying to be searched for is this double beta decay when this neutrino flip and is not seen. So it's only at the end of this double beta decay spectrum like line. And this is some idea that got very early by Fourier, that he just proposed that this will be the method. So it's been there for many years. Okay, so I look into this problem several times, and then this problem faces first observation, allow progress really with the liquid and gas, so noble gases really is making a huge progress in the determination in the search for neutrinos that beta decay. But there are theoretical hurdles that have to be solved. So in this paper several years ago, then basically we just were polemic in showing that we don't have a good control on the nuclear physics in this process. It's true that this is a process that is very difficult, but it, because even you measure the double beta decay with neutrinos, the levels involved and the sum of the levels that you have to include when you are in the neutrinos of beta decay is very different. So it's a very complicated problem, but it's still people, oh, this is a mess up. So, but people have been, since then, trying to improve a little bit. Still is a large uncertainty in one of the factors that you need here. So I mean, this is the nuclear physics, this factor F, that this is basically the dynamics of the system. And the process, of course, written before is proportional to the this mass insertion that you have, that at the end is that you have so a UE producing one beta, absorbing the other beta, so you have UE to the mass state, the flip, and the other mass state. So at the end, you get proportional to some mass term, that is this neutrinoless double beta decay mass term. I will explain it in a second. Sorry, let me look into the here. So where we are with respect to this search? So this is predictions produced by knowing the mass parameters in the by neutrino oscillations. So what you don't know is the mass scale. It could go up and down, okay? But what you know, once you fix the mass scale, then you know all the other parameters. The uncertainty comes because in this mixing matrix that is proportional, so the amplitude is proportional to this combination of masses and mixings, there are two phases that were not present when you have total lepton number conservation. In Majorana neutrino, so that means when you compute how many phases you have free, because you relabel your states, then you get with one in the case of Dirac fermions. But in the case of Majorana fermions, because of this relation, this Majorana relation, then you cannot get rid of two. So at the end, you have two extra phases. And these extra phases are not known. And they mess up a little bit on what is the what are the predictions. So this is where we are for the two hierarchies. OK, why I cut here, just is for, in this case, is for illustration, is if some experiment tells me that the lowest scale is within
so
there.
This is
this is including including also uncertainty in the in the in the yeah. In fact, here I'm including because this is a work that I did with this experimentalist. We are including the uncertainties that are accepted by the community that are somewhat a little better than the ones that we complained about 10 years ago. So they are included. And the thing is that this is running experiments where they are going to be. So running experiments are going down very quickly. And this is where they will be when they go from the present few hundred kilograms of novel material. So that means xenon in this case, and they go to ton scale. So the thing is, in principle, they could cover this region. One of the things that is important I didn't mention up to here is that I was just basically doing this discussion, saying, well, there are problems if I only include these heavy right-handed neutrinos, but let's just hide them under the carpet. And they say, well, only Majorana-like neutrinos contribute to this process. That's what I am assuming. This may be not right. And if it is not right, many times this is not advertised, but I think it's well-known in the literature, but many people don't advertise, is that it could well be that neutrinos are Majorana, but neutrinos that beta decay is dominated by right-handed neutrinos if they are not too heavy, or by beyond the standard model lepton violation currents. So that this is a process that happens. So just this will be a way, if this is this program is completed, to determine whether this is right or not. So the thing that is well known, this is for SU2 cross U1, but this has been extended for other gauge theories. What is well known is that if you have a Majorana mass term, this is the case of a, sorry, if you have a double body decay process, then you have a Majorana mass term. What is not often common, discussed or common, is that this is a for loop process. So that means really numerically, the contribution of the Majorana mass is really very small. So that means it's not that one guarantees the other. The thing is that once you see neutrinoless double beta decay, certainly there will be a small contribution to the Majorana mass, so neutrinos will be Majorana. But if this is enough to explain the Majorana mass, that's not in this kind of theorem. So, and I think I'm in time, so let me move to the third topic that I mentioned, that this is, well, why cosmic neutrinos and how can you look at and try to help in this problem? So, certainly there are hard, it's very hard to figure out some observable that is going to see difference between Majorana and Dirac neutrinos in the universe. And the basic reason, this is a simulation by the way, although I'm, as I said, an astroparticle physicist, this is sometimes if you need to push or help in some direction, then you have to just put your hands also in doing that. So that means this is a simulation that I did with a student. And then I'll tell you why, and I'll discuss why this Majorana Dirac cannot be distinguished, but this kind of methods can help. Well, knowing the total mass is clearly very important to close this region and figure out whether neutrinos are Majorana and they have the neutrinos of beta decay contribution from the light neutrinos. The methods up to now, the best method up to now is spectroscopic. So basically, what you have is the beta decay, and you want to go very close to the end, very few events. So that means you have to make a really very large spectroscope with the best nuclei that you can, low skew, that this is tritium, and then look for the most precise spectroscopic measurement of the electrons in this endpoint of the beta. This is a very hard problem, and the largest detector that is now being built is Catrin, and their goal is to go to 0.6 electron volts. In here, there is also sometimes numbers can be said in different ways, but correspond to the same. So when in Catrin they say 0.2 electron volts, it is true. It is their observable. Their observable is not the total mass of neutrinos, it's the mass of the neutrino that they measure. And the neutrino in beta decay is the electron neutrino. But the electron neutrino is a combination of mass eigenstates. So it's a combination of the three masses. So, but at this mass, neutrinos are degenerate. So at the end, it's three times. So it's the mass of the electron is one third of the total mass. So that's why you can read 0.6 or 0.2 is very simple. OK, new players are coming into the game. So two European efforts based on an idea by two particle physicists in the early 80s, De Rújula and Lucignoli, that they propose, well, go to calorimetric. Instead of beta decay, always with neutrinos and with this process, you can go to the same processes. You produce the electron or you capture the electron. So you capture the electron in the best Q value, in the lowest one that you can have, that is this half mu. And in this capture, then what you see is calorimetrically the decay of this half mu, the lines of this half mu. When they proposed that in the 80s, calorimetry was not so good, so that means the idea stayed there, but things now with have been significantly developed, and then with microcalorimetry, they claim that they can reach sensitivities that is very good. Therefore, this idea now is now taking place, and people are building the first real detector in Europe that with the goal, get close to Catrin. This is still, so that means it's 2 decades behind this technique. So that means in principle, this has lots of promise to go down. The other is a very beautiful idea by some neutrino physicists in MIT that says, oh, let's keep using beta decay, but let's try to measure the energy of the electron more precisely. How? Bring the electrons in a cyclotron and try to measure with a given magnetic field the frequency of this, so that means the energy of the electron by the frequency in the cyclotron. And with that, in principle, you could do much better. But this is still an idea. So that means the goal is to test the method for the moment. OK, so, but this is just to show that there are, of course, lots of efforts in lab. But up to now, just surfing in the literature, so when you go to mass limits, always you come to cosmology. So you have to face that cosmological observables, even being plugged maybe from systematics, they have really lots of sensitivity because they have lots of objects to go down. So let me just very briefly and this transparency summarize and go to some of the things at least I'm being involved. So first of all, neutrinos decouple when weak interactions are slower than the Hubble. And at that time, MeV scale, then these neutrinos, because we are considering low mass, so that means these small mass neutrinos, they are relativistic. So, and there are no more interactions since then, they free stream. So this Fermi Dirac distribution stays up to now. And just using entropy conservation, then you can figure out how much is the contribution from neutrinos to the contribution of photons that are that free stream a little later with the temperatures by this change in degrees of freedom that basically is in photons, including the electron positron disintegration. So for practice, in practice, what you do is just you count photons and neutrinos, assuming that the electron positron don't influence basically the problem. It's just they happen at, independently. And second is that this is instantaneous. So it means you have only one distribution. And that is this N effective. That will be three, but because of corrections that electron positron happens at the same, so very close to where neutrinos decouple, then there are corrections that correspond at the end. In practice, you see this funny number that there are no three neutrinos contributing. Of course, there are three neutrinos. This is just a trick to keep the standard and basic formula and simple of the neutrinos decoupling at fixed temperature. So with that, you can basically estimate, knowing CMB, very precise numbers of what is the temperature, the density, that this is, you see, 0.17 electron volts. If you compare with the masses, you see at least two neutrinos, well, at least, are non-relativistic today. And then you can see how the different particles evolve with the expansion of the universe. And depending on the mass, neutrinos become non-relativistic. You see, photons, if neutrinos are massless, of course, follow photons when that matter dominates. But if not, at some point they become close to, well, like dark matter, a little warm. And then this is dark energy evolution. Okay, so the important thing, at least we try to convince the community, is we are getting close to a point where just talking about one parameter is not the right approach. If you have degenerate neutrinos, you don't see difference between them. Of course, there is one parameter, the total mass. The three masses are equal. But now, because the sensitivity is getting close to the mass of one of them, to this splitting point of 5 electron volts, et cetera, so really you have to separate them, neutrino masses. How many there are? Three. In principle, you could have three parameters. Well, it's much better to see a hierarchy of importance in cosmological observables. And the most important, of course, is the total mass. That this is the lightest plus the heaviest, depending on the hierarchy, is defined in one or the other way. And the second in importance is the largest splitting. And I will mention why this is relevant. And the largest splitting, in principle, as you see, I'm here just using it normalized to as a parameter normalized to the total mass. Depending on the fraction, of course, when you go to pure hierarchical, then it's 1 or 0.5. But if you are in a regime that this is in the mean, then you have some delta. And there is a very well-defined prediction because this has been measured by neutrino oscillations. Okay, so the theory of that, or the prediction, is very good. But what if we ask cosmological observables? The thing is, one of the first comments that typically particle physicists will tell someone that being cosmological observable says, well, you have lots of systematics. How certain are you that your model is so simple? Is this very naive with very few parameters, et cetera? Well, one can answer that neutrinos are kind of standard and they should be there. And also, the contribution of neutrinos is independent of whether they are Majorana or Dirac, because when they decouple, basically independent, because, you know, if they are Majorana, the right-handed are far away, so you only count two states. If they are Dirac, the right-handed were not interacting with the medium, so at the end you have the same counting. But the important thing is that, well, this is one of the ways. So if you are in the right spot of parameters when neutrinos are measured, if you measure sigma, you could also measure delta independently. And delta is characteristic of something that you measure in lab. So now it cannot be confused, etc. Still, we are not there. But at least it's not that neutrinos are going to come like any kind of radiation that become non-relativistic at some point. No, that means you have some indications that neutrinos are like that. And this is what we try to check here with the linear power spectrum. And I will go fast and not in many, many details. But this is the two important effects of neutrinos is that they change matter radiation equality, because when they became non-relativistic, of course, they count in one side and not in the other. And they suppress power on small scales because of this free streaming scale, that basically neutrinos escape. And in the same way that you have the Jeans length, then you have this characteristic length that unless you are in radiation domination, when you are in matter domination, then it falls out and then don't collapse. And therefore, you can have suppression of power. And here, what we can see is in a very precise linear power spectrum calculation that there is some dependence on delta. Delta for neutrino oscillation is around this. So that means there is a small fraction. So that means, as you see, the dependence is not very large, but it's something that with accumulation of data in principle could be done. Once you go to the linear regime, of course, you have to convince.
Yeah.
Well, what you see is how much changes the power spectrum, because this is variation of is percent variation of power spectrum with respect to delta. So you need to be at 1%. This is 0.5%.
It's less than a percent.
This is 0.0. It's five. Okay, sorry, I cannot see
properly. Dividing by delta there. The delta in the denominator. The vertical axis.
Yeah. This is 1 over p, delta p over delta. Yeah.
So you
have to multiply by.
Another delta. So that goes farther down. Do I understand that correctly?
I don't think so, because here this is the when you change a unit of delta, right? Well, then this is the partial variation, the relative variation of power, right?
But it's not because you're divided by delta there.
So it's the derivative.
But that's right. So you have to multiply. So delta log p is what you plotted there times delta.
Yeah. No, but let me just show in the next, in two transparencies, because, and then you will see what is, well, any of these issues is you're going to see is not going to be very simple. So then we move to, once you are in the linear regime, then you say, well, but really structures and where neutrinos are and when neutrinos are more non-relativistic is in large scale structure. So that means when there are no linear effects, so then you have to go to n-body simulations in one way or the other. And then just to correct results by including gravity. So we started by some different size boxes with not too many particles. This is sufficient for dark matter and 10 to the 9 for neutrinos. That depends, of course, what is your resolution. And remember that in cosmological simulations, one particle corresponds to basically a very big galaxy. But I was told by one of our colleagues in the area, Wallypen, that they are really impressive, and they improve this by a factor of 1,000. So that means they are going to 10 to the 12 neutrinos to go to better resolution and determine better. So here is just an indication of things that you can see. This is in the number of neutrinos that you have in your simulation box. Basically, you start with the conditions after inflation, a linear power spectrum, and then you go to a given redshift. For neutrinos, it's kind of a delicate thing. You have to make sure. And then you discretize, and then there you let the full gravity work. At that time, Newtonian is good enough. And then here you see, for example, what is the profile of neutrinos that is not NFW, because they are warmer than cold dark matter. They form here. They don't form a cusp. And then you can characterize it, etc. And then you can see that there is going to be, of course, an overdensity of neutrinos in the cores of the objects. And also, more importantly, the Fermilinear distribution then also is going to change because gravity is going to affect mostly the low-velocity neutrinos in this Fermilinear distribution than the others. So that means these all things can be characterized, and this is a way just to tell you some brief things. This can be further characterized and modeled with a particular and dependence on the mass of the cluster and the mass of the neutrinos. And the thing, we still don't have resolution, but I hope that this Wellipen group is able to make this more precise. How much overdensity do we have here in our own Milky Way? So there are a long list of observations, so I will flash because I think I have to run, we have to stop at 11. So there are a long list of observations. And the thing is that there is increasing sensitivity in finding more, that they are particularly sensitive to neutrino mass. I've been involved in some of them, just work with some cosmologists, particularly in Spain. And even I have the pleasure to have other visitors that they were working on this. This is somewhat a more practical answer to what you asked me before. So that means, how hard is this to obtain? Well, it's very hard. And here you see, basically, when you have an ultimate survey, so basically you take basically all the sky for large scale structure or for weak lensing. And then you see that those are the sensitivities to delta, and those are measurements for, this is for lensing and this is for power spectrum. So it means it's hard from a linear power spectrum to get it. And from here, you can get this factor 0.05 that you were discussing. So also, the thing, where do you look for the impact of neutrinos in large-scale structure? Because these guys are kind of fast. You have, sorry, and then you want them to be influenced by gravity. Go to the biggest potential wells. So you go to the biggest clusters, 10 to the 14 of 10 to the 15, and the enhancement is very large. You can count many of them. You can include many of them. You can do weak lensing, and then you can compare on the line of sight how many neutrinos are compared to dark matter. And again, it's difficult, but you can collect so many objects that in principle is some other observable that is doable. And then one of very beautiful ideas that, as I said, Wellipen started considering when he was visiting Spain about 3 years ago, it was, well, I didn't show in the simulations, but neutrinos have a very different velocity distribution in space than dark matter. So what you have is that if you look at in the center of mass for these velocities of dark matter, so the neutrinos, what happens is that they are kind of crossing through, and then due to gravity, they will form some kind of cusp or some kind of a wake. And the issue is whether this wake is measurable and how important it is. So he came with that. It's a very difficult problem because this wake comes kind of far from the object. So that means the number of particles that you are going to have there in a simulation is very small. That's why they go so far. And then in principle, they claim it's tough, but it will be doable. So let me just show in 10 seconds is where are we going? And this is the summary of, I think, what is the progress and where is the field now? Is quite recently, there has been a very aggressive limit by using simulations and interpreting beautiful Lyman alpha forest data from Bosch, where the limit basically is compatible with zero, but with errors that are very small. It's about less than 0.1, at one sigma, it's 0.15 for 95%. If it is correct, that will be the message. The message will be you have to be there at one sigma or two sigma or so. So that means if this is going in that direction, at the end, you will just make sure you are in one hierarchy or in the other, just by neutrinos, the mass scale. So the issue with that is that things still have systematics that are getting very close to at least, or now, give us some information on this. And then the other situation is that in cosmology, of course, the better understood data seems to show that neutrinos don't have to show up for the moment, but some other observables, in principle, with, of course, they may suffer from systematics, but it's cluster counts by Sunjaev's Lovick surveys, they seem to show that they need some kind of extra contribution, and neutrinos could be that. If that's the case, that's the example I use. So that means then neutrinos double beta decay will be within reach. This, certainly from one side and the other, would be clarifying. I think within, let's say, 10 years, we should be knowing what is happening with respect to this beautiful question. So there's lots of work ahead, but it's an old problem, 80 years old problem. So we probably may have to wait a few more, but I hope that smaller than the time lag. Thank you very much.